Welcome to the Pilates Progressions Program. I'm Katrina Foe, your host for tonight, and I'm excited to get started. We've got some great questions. Tonight we're going to talk quite a bit about scoliosis, and then we've got some other fun little things to throw in there. So keep those questions coming. You guys have done a great job of sending some things in. I haven't got a lot of responses about the self-evaluation, so I'm not sure if you guys are just nervous about sending information about yourself in, or you just haven't done it, or you know, who knows? So I would encourage you guys to get those in. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about doing the self-evaluation, whether you're in the program right now or you're done with the program or you've been done for a while. It's always good to check in. I would say those self-evaluations are that we have in the resource section on the P3 website under Binder. That they're good to do probably, I don't know, every 3-6 months, at least every year, just to kind of assess yourself and bring to light and shine some light on the areas that you think you're weakest. Because a lot of times, I mean, you know them, you're doing the self-assessment, but you know, you can kind of bury them and not think about them. And that way you can really focus yourself on what you need to work on. And because you're in the P3 program, you know, of course, you're in for life. Sounds bad. It's not a jail sentence. It's a good thing. But you have access to this and you can get help with those things as you deepen your teaching skills. You know, so at the beginning, you know, there's so many areas that you need to work on. Sometimes it can be overwhelming, but as you get going, you know, there's usually certain areas, things like value-adding statements and imagery and such that most people have a harder time with. And we have presented them in the P3 program at the very beginning so that you can have a vision of where you want to go as a teacher and what would make you a good teacher and how to get there. But we're not expecting you to get there, you know, all at once. However, we also want to give you help to get there. And so this is your opportunity. If you have areas that you want to grow in and you're not really sure what to do with it, give me some feedback on them so I can give you more information and further help you along your goal to become an amazing teacher. Because that's the only way you can really help your clients, which I know you all have a passion for doing. Otherwise, you wouldn't spend this much time and money on this. All right. So it is January. And, of course, that means probably you're getting some new clients calling. We talked a bit about it last week, what you should be doing to prepare yourself. If you didn't catch that, check it out. It's always a good thing to follow those protocols, but especially at this time of year, no matter where you live, whether you're in Phoenix or London, it doesn't matter. I would also recommend that you set yourself some goals. So we talked about doing a self-evaluation. Give yourself some goals. This could be something, you know, professionally, not just, you know, I want to lose 10 pounds or whatever personally, but set some goals, you know, things like, you know, I want to make sure that I'm committed to get my personal practice in every day. I want to do something for continuing ed, like a workshop or a conference this year. I want to read this book or study my anatomy more or, you know, whatever it is that you think would really help you grow as an instructor. And help your clients more, whether it's learning more about how to run your business or something that you could do to help your business, maybe some of the things we talked about on the P3 program, you know, whatever it is, just make those goals. So if you haven't done that already, it's not too late. It's only a couple weeks into New Year, and you've still got plenty of time. But make this a great year for you to grow as an instructor and professionally. Okay, so I'm going to jump right into those questions because you guys have sent some good ones in. So we're going to start with some easy ones, so to speak. On the lines of helping yourself become a better instructor and setting goals, one of the instructors wrote, "Hi, Katrina. I'm thinking of going to London, Birmingham specifically, in April or July to visit a friend. I wanted to see if I could find a Pilates seminar to attend over there. Any ideas on how I should go about searching for one? Should I just Google studios over there and see if they have continuing ed courses? Thanks for your advice." Great question. And I have to say, I'm a little jealous. London at that time of year sounds absolutely fabulous. So I think that's a great idea. And I think it would help you write off part of the trip. So that's always an extra bonus, right? I know that Alan Herdman teaches over there. I don't know the name of his studio, but I know you could Google him. And he's a very well-known I've been an instructor for a very long time, very interesting, funny guy. You could start with him. He does a lot of teacher training, so even if he doesn't have anything coming up, maybe he would know someone that does. He's well-connected. So that's always a good thing to ask, is not only do you have something, but do you know anyone else that might, or where would be the best place to look, because they're going to know if there's some specific boards and listings or anything. Since it's outside of the U.S., I don't know they would have anything listed like on the PMA, but I think Google would probably be your best bet in terms of finding that. I don't have any really great, like, oh, this is going on just at that time, unfortunately, but I think the more you Google different studios and just send, like, write a little sample email, oh, I'm going to be visiting, I'd love to connect with you, you know, your studio looks great, do you know of any workshops going on in this time frame that I might be able to take, and just send it to a whole bunch of studios that are in that area, and maybe one of them will know something. I mean, there might not be anything going on, but there might, and it would be so great to be able to double dip on your trip, right? So good luck with that, and I hope you have a fabulous time in England. Okay, let's see. Next question. Sorry, I couldn't have something really concise for you there, but anytime you're going somewhere, I think it's always a great idea to see if you can find a really great studio, even if it's just something to go take a lesson, a private lesson with somebody that's really well-known and is very talented. That's always a great bonus, because the more different instructors you see, and just getting to be in their space and see their studio and how it's set up can give you so many ideas, especially if you own your own studio or work for yourself kind of thing. I absolutely love doing that. So even if you only get to take some privates, only, it might be worth contacting some of those people. All right, next question. I have a client that walks like a ballet dancer with her feet turned out. I've gotten myself all confused about what the muscle imbalance is. Are her inner thighs strong or weak? I think I've overthought it now and I'm just stuck. Happy face. When we're doing footwork in first position, her heels stay together and she can bring her inner thighs completely together. Should I be working her in this position since she's already, quote, good at it, or should I be doing things with her legs in internal rotation? Thanks for your help. Okay, I'm going to answer this question in two ways. One, I'm going to give you the kind of layman's version, and then I'll give you some anatomy in terms of specific muscle imbalances. Okay, so first off, I'm going to assume that she's not actually a ballet dancer. Since you say she walks like one. But again, if she is a ballet dancer, this would probably be the exact same thing. So if somebody walks like that, first off, there is some muscle imbalance going on, and the external rotators of the hip are tight and holding her in that position. So the internal rotators of the hip are loose and or weak and are not allowing her to stay in neutral. So the major thing that you want to work on with her is working on that muscle imbalance, but also probably one of the most powerful things is just recalibrating what center is for her. Okay, and that's where you are going to get being paid for having eyes that can step outside of her body and give her some feedback, because she can't see the stuff. And so you want to draw her attention to this and say, did you notice this? And a lot of times they don't even notice it, and they just completely oblivious to the fact they're doing this stuff, which makes me laugh. You know, a ballet dancer totally knows it and stuff, but just because she's a ballet dancer is no excuse. Ballet dancers should walk normally. That's a weird thing, separate issues, usually some psychological stuff there. But, okay, so what does that mean? That means that when you're teaching her, I would work her in neutral, so like a parallel position or internal rotation, and that's going to help work on this muscle imbalance. But more than that, I would be giving her cues to bring her awareness to this. Okay, so if she gets up on the reformer to, say, do elephant, and she stands with her legs turned out, I'm going to say, okay, now look down. And that's a great opportunity to look down because you can completely see it. Do you see how your legs are turned out? I want you to bring it back to parallel and let her see herself get in parallel, where her legs are standing, her toes are pointing straight towards her shoulders. And then I want, you know, maybe while she's not moving, you know, close your eyes and just feel what that feels like. Feel where the weight is on your feet. Feel what feels different in your ankle and your knee and your hip. And, you know, make her work in that. And when she does this, this is going to be a very bizarre feeling for her. This is not going to feel normal. So be careful your verbiage. It's neutral. It's not normal. Because normal for her is external rotation, okay? So bring her to the, bring her awareness to that as much as possible. Now, because I don't have the person in front of me to see, and anatomically, it's a little hard for me to tell you exactly where the muscle imbalance is, because if her muscle imbalance is at the hip, it would be her external hip rotators are strong and tight, one or the other, and her internal rotators are weak and loose. But again, that isn't necessarily what's happening. So you want to look a little closer when you see her next and make sure it's coming from her hip, not from her knee. Because a lot of people actually have it where their kneecaps are facing forward and their toes are facing out. And so there's actually, the human knee should have some internal and external rotation. Okay, that's normal. It's good. We don't really talk about that because we don't want to encourage it to happen because we want it to track in the center. But in a bad way, people could have it like this. So make sure that it's not coming from her knee and then you're cueing all this weird hip stuff and maybe screwing things up, even getting it more confused. And so the way you would see that is when you're looking at her, if her kneecaps face straight forward and her toes face out, then it's coming from the knee versus her kneecaps face the same way as her feet. And again, in my opinion, that's a less scary thing to have to deal with because the knees are kind of tricky with that. So check that out. And then in terms of the anatomy, you want to remember that the three muscles that internally rotate the hip, or the thigh at the hip joint, would be the tensor fascia lata, the gluteus medius, and gluteus minimus. So your two glutes and your TFL. And so those muscles are going to work against the six deep external hip rotators. So you remember all those? So we've got our piriformis and our gemellus, the quadratus femoris, all those guys, and the obturator internus and externus and such. And those, again, we usually lump them together as the deep external hip rotators. We've also got the glute max, which also contributes to that external rotation. So somewhere in there, whether it's glute max or the deep external hip rotators, you've got some extreme tightness. And again, this does happen a lot in dancers, which is why your question said, you know, like a dancer. However, it's not even a good thing for a dancer because functionally you'll get more strength and more movement if the body is not sitting in the end range of its motion. So this goes true for a ballet dancer at the hips. It goes true for a weightlifter at the elbows when they're working their biceps. But you have to open the joint completely and have full range of motion in order to have the most strength. So again, this all goes back to muscle balancing, is if the muscles are balanced, okay, at the joint. So there's not something too tight and strong, and there's not something too weak and loose. You're going to have the maximum flexibility and strength. And that's why in Pilates we want to always be focusing on looking for where there's muscle imbalances and addressing them from the deepest place of where it's actually happening. And that can be many places. And, of course, all of us have multiple imbalances. So it was a great question. You probably already see the point of working on the muscle imbalances. I just wanted to mention that for other people. Again, I wouldn't recommend getting so hung up on the names of muscles and which muscles are draining. In terms of the general movements, that's going to be the most profound because that's going to give you the information of what you want to do with them in terms of exercises and which variations you want to choose. It also is going to flavor your cues. Now, when you start working with this person, again, you're going to take them out of their comfort zone and they're going to start doing wacky things. So watch that they don't start doing weird things at the knee joint or the ankle joint and the foot. So when you put them in parallel, you get their feet to track properly, they might start to pronate or supinate or put all their weight on their toes or their heels or do wacky things there. They might start to, you know, internally rotate at the knee instead of at the hip if those hips are really tight. And so you want it to come truly from the joint that was tight, having to open up. And so it might take a little while, and it might not move as fast as you like. And that is all part of the process. So look for where the movement's not coming from and work at getting it there. And the best way to do is to simplify the exercises. You know, footwork is a great one to work on. I think that probably the best thing to do for footwork for her would be to do it with the feet completely together, so in parallel with a complete adduction, because she can't do any weird knock-knee strange things, possibilities, if she's in that position. Okay, so you're forcing her to do it correctly, if you will. Same thing if you're doing, I don't know, some standing work, say, you know, Russian squats, which is basically the same movement as footwork. You're doing that hip and knee movement. I would do it all the way adducted, feet together, knees together. She's going to have less likelihood of being able to pronate, supinate, and do wonky knee things if she's all the way adducted. And that's not that, you know, you don't want to work sits bone distance apart sometimes once people have the movement. But for most people that don't know where neutral is, it's a good place to work on it. Plus, most people are a little weak on their inner thighs. And by inner thighs, I mean the adductors. That is not the muscle imbalance that we're talking about that would turn her legs out, but it's just a side, separate note. So hopefully that answers your question. Let me know if you have any follow-up questions with that, or if when you look at her it is coming from the knee, what you want to ask about that. Okay, so if you have a question, you can call in. I forgot to mention that earlier. So it's 347-838-9945. It's always the same number. Again, that's 347-838-9945. And just hit the number 1 to let me know that you have a question. I'll put a little thing up on my screen so I can see, oh, hey, they want to talk. They're not just listening in, because some people prefer to call in to listen versus on the Internet. All right, now I have a very complicated question next. This comes from an instructor, and as she wrote it, I went back and forth with her several times to ask her some questions, because she wrote it a couple days ago, and I wanted to make sure that I understood the whole picture before I started giving her any questions. So I'm going to read our correspondence, and the reason I want to read it back and forth is because I want you to try to get inside of my head as to why I'm asking the questions I'm asking, because these are the questions that I would ask if this was my client and I was working with them for the first time, because this is the stuff I want to know, and I want you to understand why I want to know it and what this is going to tell me. Okay? So bear with me. It's a lot of correspondence. All right. She wrote, "Hi, Katrina. I wanted to connect with you about a client I have. She is 14, 8th grade, and has pretty severe scoliosis. She's collapsed on the left side. She's about 5'8 and thin. She's also having knee pain, which I suspect is from her growth plates. It has been confirmed they are not matured yet. I work mostly mat with her. We focus on stabilization in different areas. We do flexion, but in moderation. Never loaded flexion, because in the reading I've done with Pilates and children, this age can be very precarious with loaded work on the spine due to growth plates solidifying. We do some roll-ups and roll-downs and bridging. That's probably the extent of flexion. She has a hard time focusing for long periods of time and has a very hard time holding still, but we're getting better. We work pretty well together, but I was wondering if you could give me some insight as to how I can use some more specific targets to help straighten her out in the long run." Okay. Okay, so that was the first email. And what I want to highlight there is that she said a lot of stuff that I wanted to know more about. Okay, so there's some stuff that I wasn't quite sure where she was going. So here's what I wrote back. I wrote, "I'd love to help you. Let me ask you a few questions so I can answer yours best. Does she dance or do any special sport or activity?" Okay, so I want to know if there's anything else that's going on in her life. Usually at that time of people's life, that has a lot of impact on their body. And it also, as a child, that age group, they tend to be a little like wet noodles, okay, unless they do some kind of sport or activity. And if they do some kind of sport or activity, they've learned some self-control of their body, which goes so far as to what they can do. Also, if you push them a little more, it can really help their activity, dance or sport or whatever. Okay, so I want to know what we're working with there. I also asked, "Where are you getting the exercise for children protocols?" I have not heard those protocols, so I wanted to know where she was getting that so that I can understand where she's coming from. I wrote, "Is she coordinated?" Again, I was kind of going back to the wet noodle thing. I want to know if she's a wet noodle or if she is a spaz and all that kind of stuff, because that's going to affect greatly what you would want to do with her, and I'll talk more about that later. All right. "Can she hold her attention well? Okay, so there's the physical self-control of your body, and then there's also the mental focus. And unfortunately today in schools, they're not really addressing being able to have self-discipline in the body or the mind as much as I think children should. And so a lot of kids, unless they have had some kind of a sport or dance training, they don't do very well holding their attention to a physical activity very well. Okay, what muscular imbalances do you see? And I put parentheses besides the scoliosis. Okay, so she wrote back. She's not a dancer, and this is where I struggle a bit. And this particular instructor is a dancer, a dance teacher, so that give you that background. Sure, because she doesn't hold still like my kids do, but she plays tennis and would like to play seriously in high school. Okay, that's good to know. The protocols I got from the book, Pilates for Children and Adolescents, that was issued by the PMA last year, very informative. They break up kids into three levels and talk about the differences in teaching for each age group, both physically and psychologically. I use a lot of the exercises they suggested for my really young children. They had some great modifications for little ones, and my babies love them. Her coordination is something I can't speak to accurately yet. We have worked together three times, and I haven't done anything with her to really see her coordination, but she's a very good listener. She catches cues very well, and she is an excellent breather. She can do a great ribcage breath, and she mastered the one lung breathing straight away. I find I can teach the breathing to kids a lot more easily than with our adult clients. I have yet to have a child not figure out the different breath types. They can't always maintain them, but they can always do them. She is very inflexible, especially the hamstrings. This is not surprising, especially with her height and growth plate issues. Besides the imbalance in her spine, we have not discovered any major strength imbalances. She can feel the difference in the sides with her legs, arms, and back, but doesn't stop her from being able to correct it. Okay, such great information. Okay, so she's not a dancer, but she does play a sport. She's a tennis player. This is a huge, huge thing. So there's a lot of running involved in tennis, and there's a lot of rotation in tennis. So the rotation, very interesting, because that could really be playing into her scoliosis. I'll come back to that more later. The running, hello, this could be a big factor in her knee stuff, so I want to look into that. Okay, so the Pilates for Children book by the PMA. I, unfortunately, do not have a copy yet, so if anyone wants to send me one as a late Christmas present, that would be awesome. Just kidding. So I haven't actually read what they have written, but I have not seen any research about not doing flexion with children, and I would really, really question that, and I cannot imagine that is a good idea, because flexion is so critical in everyday movement, and those of you that have children know, I mean, you're not going to stop a child from flexion, and I think flexion is actually very important for the cerebral spinal fluid to be moving up and down the body, up and down the spine, rather, so I don't agree with that. Now, if they're talking about loaded flexion specifically, I might tend to agree with that. And what that would mean is where you're putting a pressure in a compressive force onto the spine. And again, children do this naturally, so I don't think it's that bad. But when you start adding resistance, like on our equipment, you might want to be a little careful. So what this means is an exercise like tower might not be a great choice. And you already know this innately because your clients that can't decompress their spine very well are going to have a hard time with this. Now, I think that the flexion for children in the loaded flexion, I think the biggest problem with that is the spaz factor because they are unpredictable. They aren't always consistently in control of their body. They are distracted more easily and such. So, and there's such a wide range of children. I mean, I have seen 14-year-olds that are way more coordinated and focused than adults. And I've seen some that are just little wet noodles that are not sure if they're coming or going. I've worked with ADD kids. I've worked with professional ballerinas. So it's all over the place. And I think that if they're writing that, part of that has to do with such a wide spectrum of what people can do at that age. I by no means agree with them that you shouldn't do flexion with children. I would actually counter that and say I think flexion is awesome for kids. I think kids should be moving as many ranges of motion as possible, full range. I mean, unless they've got some funky thing going on, I don't see any reason to be stopping them. Again, most kids that come into the studio have an issue, a reason to come in, like this girl's got scoliosis. So you just want to be careful with that. Okay. Now, she also wrote that her coordination is something she can't speak to. I would argue with that. I think you know she's coordinated. You've worked with her 3 times. You know. I'm not asking, like, minutia. I'm just saying, when you say, move your leg here, does she move her leg there? Okay? So from what you've said, you know that she is coordinated. You said she catches cues very well. She's an excellent breather. Those are things that somebody that's not coordinated would not get. She might not hold still and maybe like a dancer, but that does not necessarily mean she's not coordinated. So from what you said, besides that sentence, I would say she probably is. So I think you were thinking maybe I meant more than that. I'm just a basic thing there. Okay, now in terms of the flexibility of the hamstrings, okay, that's a really good indication of a muscle imbalance that we want to think about. And then you wrote, it's not surprising, especially with her height and her growth plate issues. Okay, so as a follow-up, I asked, I wrote, good info. You are talking a lot about the growth plate issues. Did they mention that, or is this your assessment? Did she mention Osgood Slaughter's disease? Not sure if I spelled that right. And then I wrote that I haven't gotten the PMA book yet. Did it say not to do flexion with them? Did it say not to do weight-bearing flexion loaded work? And then she wrote back, okay, so I'm throwing out there, Osgood Slaughter's disease is something that has to do with the growth plates. When people are growing, the tibia, so your shin bone, the growth plates are at either end of the bone before the head and neck of the bones. So the long bones have growth plates, and that's where the bones actually grow at. So it's not the whole thing, it's just at either end. And so at the top of the tibia, that can actually grow, and people get pain there. And it's about the tibial tuberosity, so that place where you nick yourself when you shave, that's about where the pain comes in with Osgood Slaughter's disease. It sounds really awful and technical, but basically what you do is you kind of rest it and are nice to it, and it'll go away real soon because you don't grow for more than a year or two, right? And I would argue that I would guess at 5'8", at her age, that she's close to or done growing. So I'm not sure what she meant by it was confirmed. I mean, when was it confirmed? You know, that kind of thing. And how was it confirmed? And what was that all about? But I didn't ask that. I'm not sure why. Okay, so I interrupted myself. She wrote, Osgood came up, and I remember her saying it wasn't that, but another one that's commonly associated with that. I can't think of what it was called at the moment, but I can ask her. Loaded flexion was discussed in the book in Pilates for Children and about doing appropriate flexion for their growth. It doesn't say stay away from it. It just points out what could possibly be harmful. It doesn't mean that it can be. It depends more on bone density. Like if they're very athletic, then their density will be different. I love working in articulation with clients, and it also makes it easier for me to pinpoint her scoliosis, but I'm trying to be careful of anything loaded. Most of this is just me using my general knowledge and some intuition, so it'd be really nice to get some solid advice concerning work with the actual actual condition and working with someone her age. I'm just working off the cuff a bit right now. Okay, so let's see. There's a lot of things going on there. So first off, we want to know what is the condition they actually have. And I wrote, can you get me the name of the condition she has with her growth plates? What movements bother her knees? Just if she knew. Just so I have a clear picture of your question issues, what was the reason you were doing mostly mat? She wrote back. I just reached out to Lauren and will give you that information on the name of her condition. I have done mostly mat at the request from her mother, but also because I have only had her 3 times. We've done tower and reformer and chair as well, just not a ton. When I get her on the equipment, she lacks control. The tower has proven the best place so far, but also we have not seen a ton of each other yet. She really enjoys a series of stretching I do for her with her for her hamstrings, so I finish with those as a treat to get her through most of the hour. Okay. So, again, waiting. She got back to me about the name. She wrote, patellofemoral syndrome is what she has. Have you ever heard of this? And, yes, I have heard of this. It's fairly common. And she also wrote back, she does want to practice at home. Or I wrote back, why does her mom want mat? Is there a reason? Is she wanting to do it at home or something? Does she think she shouldn't be on the equipment? Okay, so we really want to get inside her mom's head. It's really important when you're working with children that you listen to what their parents want. Their parents are the ones paying for it. Their parents are the ones that are discerning what the child needs. This is not a child-focused activity, meaning this is like them going to physical therapy or to a doctor. This is for the child's good. And whatever the parent wants or deems that is necessary, you want to try to honor that because the parent knows better. The child does not know what they need. Trust me, I got five of them. The kids know nothing about what they need. It's the parent who has the outside overall big scope of what's going to be best for their life picture that you want to focus on. Okay, so she wrote back, she does want her to practice at home. She took her somewhere else first and was disappointed with how they were monitoring her on the equipment. She isn't against it. I think she was nervous about it. She has seen me work on the equipment with her and seems to be fine with it. Awesome, because of course you're a great teacher and are very conscientious in watching her and are safe and articulate. Okay, and then she wrote back, she was mentioning growth plates with me. Maybe she just meant the doctor gave her the info and they weren't done yet and she associated the two with one another. And then she finishes up with this email. I'll give you guys some. Sorry, my computer's loading slowly. Okay, and she wrote that, I know her mom wants her to come. I just want to be sure she wants to come. I think she does. She works very well with me so far. I just don't want to overwhelm her. That's the only reason I'm a bit hesitant. I'm sure my confidence in this issue will go up when I have some more ammo that helps me keep her going in the right direction. Okay, so first off, I just want to validate that you probably know more about this than you think, and there's less that you could do to hurt her than you think. Okay, so I want to free you up to do what you're good at, which is cue her through a good variety, and I'm going to give you some more details on that, and just have fun with her. I know this instructor, so I can say this with great confidence. You are a lot of fun, and you connect very well with people. So don't underestimate how much she's going to love Pilates. Don't assume that she can't handle it and that she's not going to enjoy it. So when you're working with her, I want to go back. So you've got several issues going on, and this is how it is with everyone, isn't it? It's not like the person has just one thing. You know, a lot of times when we lecture about these things, it's like we talk about osteoporosis as if it ever stands alone. Everyone's got 10 other things that are going on. So this is how it actually works when you have a client. You've got all these different things, and you have to juggle them. So the lesson about prioritization is a super important one. So we're going to talk about that. In terms of this client, you've got several different things. First off, she is a kid. She's only 14, and as tall and as old as she is still a kid. So we want to really make sure that we are cognizant of that fact. And the biggest thing with that is that she is going to be a spaz. Every once in a while, she might be unpredictable. And until you have a long-standing history, like you've been working with her twice a week for 6 months or something or more, you don't really know super well how predictable she is. And so you want to be especially careful. And what that means is that some of the exercises where there's the high chance of falling or hurting yourself or doing something wrong, you want to maybe shy away from. Or you want to give extra spotting to the clients on some of the ones that are maybe a little precarious or something. You want to give them extra cues on safety. Okay? You know, make sure you get through their head. Hey, by the way, honey, if you go too fast on this, you're going to fly out the window and break your head open. You know, you can joke with kids a lot more than you can with adults. So use that sense of humor and get through to them in a very concrete way if you are going to venture into something that's a little dangerous or they could screw up, so to speak. So safety is a big issue. I would say that the second issue of importance, I would say, is the knees. Okay, she's actually having pain, and I'm going to get into patellofemoral syndrome in a few minutes, but pain is not good. And the reason that I'm going to list this one above the scoliosis is that it's pain. The scoliosis, from what I've seen and heard, is not causing her pain. Scoliosis looks weird and it scares people, but it doesn't necessarily cause pain until it gets really, really severe. And I didn't get how severe her scoliosis was because we didn't get any numbers on here, but I'm going to guess that you're probably in the same ballpark as my idea of severe. But pain is at the high end, okay? Then I would say the scoliosis is of next importance. So working on bringing her back into neutral and getting her straightened out is very important, and that's going to be huge for long term for her. And then I would say fourth importance is her tennis. Okay, so I don't care if people list it on their forum. If they play a sport, especially since she said she wants to get more serious about it, that's a huge thing. And if you can help her with that, which you can with Pilates, that's going to go a long way, not only to her happiness as a person, but her satisfaction with you as a teacher and Pilates in general, and her staying with it, which, again, if you can help her sport and she sees value in that, she's much more likely to stick with it and be excited about coming than if, you know, she didn't see that. And, again, a lot of times things like that, external factors, can really help motivate anybody, whether it's a kid or not, more than some of those little more esoteric, like, you can breathe better, you know, or something like that. Okay, so that's the order I would prioritize these things. Okay, so I talked a little bit about the safety. So you've got the wet noodle spaz thing going on with the kid, and although it sounds like she's pretty coordinated, yeah, you just never know with kids. So keep that in mind. So say you do, like, thigh stretch on the reformer. I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying you get your hand up there in front of her chest. You make sure that you warn her and say, listen, Susie Joe, if you go fast on this, you will hurt yourself, and I will have to catch you. You know, get her attention and make sure that she knows that, because you don't want that to happen, okay? The last thing you want to do is hurt someone's little baby, and because they're going to gank them out of that Pilates studio real quick if you hurt them. It's not the same as if somebody's coming to Pilates on their own. When you have a guardian involved, they're going to be a lot more like a mama, like a hovering mama, you know, hover mother. And so you want to really be careful with that. I mean, you want to be careful with everybody, but, again, kids are less predictable. Cute boy walks in the studio, boop, their head's going the other way, right? Okay, so the knee. I wanted to talk about patellofemoral syndrome. Patellofemoral syndrome is kind of similar to, like, IT band syndrome, and where basically the kneecap is not tracking properly. There's a lot of pain in there. This is also sometimes called runner's knee. Ooh, that should be a big red flag because she's probably doing a lot of running. In the game of tennis, you do run a lot, but probably if she's taking tennis lessons, they're making her do running in addition to whatever she might be doing in PE. So she might be doing a lot of running, and that's going to cause a lot of excess problems. This is also something that is common in people that do a lot of sports. Go figure, because they do running in the sports. But in particular, adolescent girls. Ooh, she's adolescent, you know. So, again, this is not something really crazy or uncommon. A girl that's in the sport, that's young, getting this, it's not uncommon. Okay, so what's happening is that she has incorrect tracking of the patella, so the kneecap, over the femur bone, resulting in some irritation. So that cartilage and stuff is getting irritated. It could be different aspects of that that is actually getting irritated. But there's some inflammation there, which is what's causing the pain. Now, the cartilage itself is not causing pain because there's no blood vessels or nerves in the cartilage. It's other things that are rubbing on the cartilage. Okay. Bottom line, there's muscle imbalance. Okay. So this doesn't have anything to do necessarily with growth plates. This has to do with a muscle imbalance. And what you want to do is look at that, what is going on. Now, you already mentioned that she has really tight hamstrings. Look at her calves, see how they're doing. Look at her quads. Typically, people are fairly weak in their quads when this is going on, particularly the vastus medialis, so the VMO. And that's the the quad that runs up the inner side of the thigh. Now, most people tend to be weaker there anyways, but when that gets really weak, things don't track right in the quads. So when she uses her quads, when she runs, it would cause more pulling to the outside because her vastus lateralis and intermedius and the quad femoris might be stronger, and so they're tracking that patella improperly. Okay, now, the kind of other side of this is that her IT band might be tight. And again, that could be pulling on that. So what you want to do is, just like IT band syndrome, is work on looking for those imbalances. Now, I'm talking generally, stereotypically, where the imbalances tend to be, just for the general human body, especially when you're doing cardio activities and stuff like running. But there could be something different. So you want to be really careful and look at her tracking. Look at her ankle. Look at her foot. Look at when she's walking, maybe when she's doing elephant or when she's doing a standing series. Look at where she holds her weight. It should be even across the ball of the foot and the heel. Okay, you don't want to have her weight forward or back. You want to have it even. And you want to have it even from the lateral to the medial side, so the inside to the outside. You don't want to pronating or supinating or doing any of that kind of stuff. So really look at that. Look at her hips and everything. Make sure that you're looking for those imbalances. So first off, I would make a big to-do and joke about this, but really, really give her a lot of value-adding statements and get her on that foam roller. Okay? Now, I know you're saying, no, she's going to hate it. She's going to scream. Yes, but it will make her knees feel better. And that's what she really cares about. I mean, who doesn't want to get out of pain, right? So explain to her. Take her over. Show her some anatomy pictures. There's lots of good books. I know there's particular instructors at our studio. We have a great anatomy poster on the wall, and it's got a side view that you can see the IT band in real well. So show them the IT band and show them how that white fascia goes down. It attaches way down the outside of the tibia, but the fascia interweaves with the whole kneecap. And you can see it really great in those anatomy pictures. And when the IT band is tight, it actually will pull the kneecap out very, very quickly. So what you want to do, you want to work on the inner thighs, the adductors, and you want to work on the vastus medialis. And I'll talk to you about how to do this in a little bit. And you want to stretch the outside. So especially foam roller, do not be doing like side-lying leg series and stuff like that where you're working the outside of the hips. No kneeling side kicks or any of that kind of stuff. Until she gets over this, at least, leave that alone. But try this stuff. Look at these things. Again, I'm talking stereotypically, so play with this. See how she does. See what helps. See what doesn't help. And go from there. So again, these are general things to maybe look at, but it's that in that tracking of her patella that is the problem. It's not her growth plates. Her growth plates have nothing to do with the patellofemoral syndrome. That can happen at any time for people. I don't know. It's the good news. The growth plate stuff, if that was what was causing the pain, like in the Osgood Slaughters, that would actually, you know, she'd know that would end really soon. okay, so I would also focus on her quad strength, particularly when you're doing internal rotation. So I would be doing second position internal rotation footwork all day long. Not literally. I would do it every time she comes in if possible, because that's going to be a really great one to get that vastus medialis turned on. It doesn't do internal rotation, but it really seems to work it to turn on when you're doing that. The angle on it really helps. And the vastus medialis tends to be a really lazy little guy. And you know what? If you don't, like, call him to attention real early in the lesson, he'll just be out to lunch the entire time. So do it at the beginning of the lesson, and he'll be, oh, okay, I'm supposed to work. All right, I'll work. And he'll stay on when he's supposed to the whole time. And that's my favorite one, to get it turned on in the beginning. Any isometric knee work you can do is great. Again, that's going to be less likely to annoy her knee joint and make her cringe. But so we're working on quads. Get her quads strong, her rectus femoris and all those. So anytime you can add straight legs, just holding them out straight, So things like on the mermaid sitting on top of the chair, have her do it sitting with her legs straight out in front of her, sitting up. If she can't do with both of them, have her do one leg and then one leg out to the side or something. You could have her do, say, the seated, what's usually done kneeling, sidearm work on the reformer, but have her do it seated with her legs straight out in front of her and hold it up. So her quads are going to get a lot of work. I would do things like thigh stretch. You know, maybe because she's a kid and there's the spaz factor, you don't do in the reformer, so do it on the tower. You know, there's a lot less chance of something going wrong or an injury happening there. I would be doing things like the Russian squats, and do it adducted so she doesn't have as much chance of squirreling around with her knee and ankle alignment, like I talked about with the other question we talked about today. And that's why I have that on the videos with that particular variation on the class ones, because it's just so much less likely to have problems. You can add balls between her legs on things. So where you want to do it, you want to put it right at the belly of the vastus medialis. And so it's going to be above. Don't ever put balls at the actual joints of the body. Put it above or below the joint. So this time you'd want to put it above the knee joint. And that's going to encourage that muscle to fire. So kind of give it a little squeeze while you're doing any of this knee stuff that can actually help. If it doesn't help her and it doesn't, you know, props are always a tool. They don't work for everybody. So if it doesn't help her, let the ball go. And that should be a tool. You can say something like, okay, do you feel how that makes this muscle turn on more? Okay, now eventually we're going to take this ball away and I still want you to be able to connect with that. Okay, so don't just have her be a passive person with a ball between her legs. Make her really realize that the ball is a tool to help her find her muscles and get in touch with them. And that's the whole purpose of it. You do want to stretch those quads and as well as the hamstrings. I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about with your hamstring thing, but I just want to remind everyone that passive stretching is not the most effective. It's much more closely connected to injuries as well as, you know, the being sore the next day. You shouldn't be sore from stretching if you're doing it right. Okay, so I'm going to say that again. If you're stretching correctly in a healthy, helpful way to your body, you should not be sore the next day. I know that goes against everything that you hear about and people teach, because you really, if you are working the body in an active way while you're stretching and actively stretching it, the body is being protected and it won't rip and get those micro tears. And you actually can change the resting length of the muscle. I'll talk about that in a second, without having the soreness. So resting length, that's what you really want. That's when we talk about flexibility, we're talking about changing the resting length of the muscle. The resting length is simply, you know, how long the muscle is, how far it holds the two bones that it holds apart. So there's an angle of the two bones that it's holding together, and what is that angle? And the tighter the angle, the steeper the angle, the more acute the angle, the tighter the muscle is, the shorter the resting length, okay? So what we want to do is we want to increase that and open it up, and if you do it while you're working the muscle is in a protected state, and it won't get those micro tears that are so painful the next day. You won't have that downtime while you have to wait for yourself to feel better. And quite frankly, doing that passive stretching is not effective. Trust me, I did it for many, many years as a dancer. It never really changed my resting length. It wasn't until I started doing active stretching in Pilates that my resting length of my muscles started to change. So what that means work her in a way that you're stretching, but you're using the muscles. So if you want to stretch the hamstrings, do something like the hamstring stretch on the chair. Okay, get her pelvis over her feet and keep it there. All right, that's going to be much, much more effective because the hamstrings have to work as they're lengthening, and that's going to be much more effective. Do something like the leg lowers and stuff on the reformer with the feet and straps, those kinds of things. Things like short spine or elephant or things where you're using the hamstrings as you're working is going to be much more helpful. Okay, so that's a little bit about the knee stuff and what you can expect with that. Again, you don't want to have a whole lesson focused around that because it's going to be too much, but you want to sprinkle a couple things in and just think about that concept on everything that you teach. Okay, so again, that's kind of the tricky thing when you have lots of different issues going on. In terms of scoliosis, I've talked about scoliosis before in a lot of these different broadcasts. You might want to go back and listen to some of those, but I'm going to water it down and make it real simple, okay, because people will go crazy talking about how what the angle is and where the angle is and all this stuff, and people don't believe me that it's really so not that complex, okay? And I'll tell you, I have, whatever you want to call it, scoliosis, and mine used to be quite severe. When I was working at the PT clinic, they were working my back, and they actually called someone else in. Hey, look at this. Look how crazy this is. I was just mortified. I'm like, really? Am I a freak? I didn't know it. And you can't see my scoliosis at all now. Okay, so scoliosis, what you want to do is you want to help the person get in touch with where center is. That's all it is. And when you do that, the resting length of the shorter side will open up. The weakness of the longer side, that the lateral side bend that's going on in the spine, will strengthen up. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that your main goal is to cue her to symmetrical, cue her to ideal. Okay, I just want to highlight this because I get a sense that you're looking for some magic, like, lesson plan, and there really isn't one. You want to just focus on bringing her to ideal. So you are her eyes, because center does not feel center to her, and that's what she needs help with. So cueing her, okay, do you feel how you're, like, shifting to the right? Okay, I want you to sit on both butt cheeks evenly. Do you feel how as you do this roll down, you might be leaning more one side or the other? I want you to feel both sides of your spine evenly articulating on the mat. Okay, now, this is not necessarily going to happen, so you want to validate that. And that's very, very important. Validate all the time that she will feel asymmetrical, and that's okay. What we're doing is we're trying to work towards symmetrical, and your job is to bring her attention to what is symmetrical and give her all the different cues and imagery you can to help her feel symmetrical. Okay, so there's two ways you can work. No matter who you are, whether you have scoliosis or not, you can work symmetrically or you can work asymmetrically. And the way you know that which one you're doing is if you have to do a right and a left side on an exercise, then you're working asymmetrically. Okay? People that have scoliosis will compensate on the symmetrical side. There are exercises, and they'll do weird tweaky things. So they'll use their strong side more, and they'll just naturally kind of lean one way or twist one way or something to make it easier. And so your job is to draw her towards symmetrical. On the asymmetrical exercises, for a normal person, it should feel the same on both sides. Now, you may have, like, this side's a little harder because it's weaker or whatever, but it generally feels the same. For a person with scoliosis, it doesn't feel the same at all. Not at all. Not at all. So what I do when I'm teaching, and you can completely copy this, there's no copyright, is say they're doing some kind of arm work. I'll say something like, okay, this is your right side. I want you to remember how this feels. Take a mental picture, okay, because when we do the other side, it won't feel the same. And I want you to compare them and really get a feel for how it should feel on both sides, okay? I'm not saying one is right, one is wrong. I just want her to really focus on the fact and really bring her attention to the fact that they feel very different. And then on the other side, say, does this feel the same? You know, how does this feel different? And just make her articulate and talk about and feel and get in touch with her body as to how they feel different. The interesting thing is that, like I said before, tennis is a lot of rotation. Tennis is very asymmetrical. When have you ever seen somebody serve on their bad side or switch back and forth between which ways they serve? I've never seen that. My dad and my sister actually played competitively tennis, and we had a tennis court in our backyard growing up, and I played tennis, although I'm reticent to admit it because I was so terrible. But I know a lot about tennis, and tennis is a very, very asymmetrical sport, especially with the rotation. And the thing with scoliosis is that the rotation is really, really key. So anytime you have a scoliosis, no matter where it is or which side it goes to, you always have a side bending of the spine, which is, you know, what people typically think of scoliosis, but you always have a rotation as well. Okay, so it's not just a side bending, it's also a rotation. And so if you think about it, she's got this already asymmetrical spine with the rotation going on, and then she's adding a rotation-based sport. Now, this does not mean that I'm saying she should not play tennis. Please don't take this. What I am saying is that if she wants to play tennis, she really needs Pilates to make sure she doesn't do more harm to herself than good, okay? So that's your value-adding statement right there. You need to explain this to her and talk about this all the time and explain to her how the exercises that you're working on with the Pilates are going to help her tennis. Because as she works on her scoliosis, which probably she doesn't really care that much. I mean, she might notice the difference. Her mom's the one that cares about that, probably. Again, I'm making some guesses and generalizations, but she needs to know that that's going to help her tennis. And if she wants to play competitively, this is going to give her the edge. Okay, she needs to address this stuff and really work on it in depth so that she can play in high school and possibly college and all that stuff. Okay, and that's tying into the next thing. So in terms of exercises, I don't think there's a magic thing. Go through the class lesson plans like you would with any other client. I've given you some like little nuggets and ideas of modifications and stuff, but there's really no reason why you can't do a regular lesson plan. I do not recommend giving people mat work to do at home just as a general rule of thumb because, let me back up. That did not come out right. I don't recommend doing an hour of mat work or even a half an hour of mat work so that they can then do it at home because it doesn't work like that usually. Usually what happens is they try to remember some of it and they remember the stuff they're good at and it just is a big jumble. If she truly wants to do some stuff at home, take my homework, the way I teach homework, and do that. Okay, don't do mat with her the whole hour or half an hour most of the time or anything because it's just going to confuse her. And quite frankly, I think she needs the resistance to give her the feedback as to where her body is in space so that she can make quicker, more detailed progress. All right, so quick review of my homework strategies. At the end of the lesson, leave like 15, 20 minutes and pick 2 to 3 exercises that she can do that would address her top imbalances. So pick like one imbalance and give 2 or 3 exercises that she could do. Now, in terms of the exercises, it could be any exercise, but what you want to look for are things that they can't screw up. Don't give them 100 to do at home. Please, please don't anyone do that. I had somebody, a friend of mine, say, oh, I took this great mat Pilates class, and they gave me a list of all the exercises, and I'm supposed to do this boomerang at home. I'm like, are you even kidding me? Like, anything with a little bit of complexity, leave it alone or strip it down to its bare bones because they're not going to remember it. They don't care about it as much as you do. They don't understand about it as much as you do. And they've got a lot of stuff going on in their life. So keep it really, really simple. Okay, so that's different for everybody. You want to look for their imbalances. So for this person, since we talked about the knee stuff, you might want to have her do something where she puts a ball above her knees and squeezes it. You know, again, really simple, really simple. Maybe if she's willing to get a foam roller, have her do her IT bands. Really simple. Watch out for her bending her bottom leg or squirreling around, not getting the right spot on that too, by the way. Kids are even more likely to do that than as adults. Then make them write them down in front of you so you can answer any questions, and that's going to help solidify it in their head. They can write down any tips or thoughts that they'll help jog their memory. Have them do it every single day till you see them next. And what will happen usually is then when you come in, they come in again, and you say, how'd it go? And they say, this one went great, but I totally forgot this one, or this one didn't make sense when I got home. So that day, you go over the same 3 exercises again right before they leave. Don't do it right then at the beginning because they'll forget it by the end of the lesson, and let them try again. Once they've got those and they do it well, and they can do it pretty much by themselves when you watch them, then you can add one more exercise. And you can do that until they've got like 10, 15 minutes, and usually that's enough for most people to do at home. to do it every day. And that's what Joe's whole focus was, that everybody did a little every day. It wasn't, you know, necessarily have to be a huge amount. You didn't have to come in the studio every day, but you did some every day. Okay, so that's that. In terms of scoliosis, so for example, if you're going through the class lesson plans, I'm just going to grab, here's class one. So core connection breathing, do that real quick. She's good at the RA, so you don't need to spend a lot of time with that. Footwork, this is going to be great. Work her in internal rotation, second position. Footwork, so maybe you're doing a different variation. You could totally do the pelvic press. I think that'd be great. Make sure that headrest is down. Bridging, oh, that's going to be fantastic for her. When you cue that, again, you're going to be working on making sure she feels both sides of her spine, both sides of her back, going down evenly. And what that's going to do is it's going to turn the muscles on that will bring her back into a less rotated position, okay? Okay, 100, yeah, you can do that with her, okay? Again, cue that both hips feel even on the mat. When she's up in her 100 position, that she feels both sides of her lower ribs, her bra hook, evenly on there. You know, those kinds of cues that make a big difference. Baby circles, big circles, breaststroke legs, those would all be great. Again, you might want to play with doing those baby circles or the big circles in the internal rotation. That would be a fun little variation there. Short spine. I think short spine would be great for her if she can handle it. So I would proceed very slowly. I would take a hold of her feet and make sure she doesn't fly it back, okay, because she could roll up onto her neck and that could be dangerous. Again, that's what I'm talking about with the kid issues. You want to go slow, so maybe you have her roll up like just a few inches or something first. Not because she can't go all the way over, but because you want to go slow and you want to make sure she doesn't go flying. Stomach massage, that'd be great. I would definitely do that twist and focus on making sure she is aware of the difference between the different sides and such. Monkey would be a fantastic example of a good hamstring stretch for her. Long stretch, you may not want to add the push-ups, but I think for a tennis player that would be fantastic to work on upper body strength because, let's face it, us ladies are not known for our strength in our upper body, and that'd be great for her core. Elephant, fantastic for her hamstrings. Again, she's got a good view of her feet and to look, you know, where her foot is in position. Arabesque. If she's doing well on elephant, you could start to go in there. You may not want to do the heel propped up. You could just keep the elephant foot and work on, you know, just going slow. Jackrabbit is a great one. I think that'd be wonderful for her quads. I would definitely do the knees off, you know, jackrabbit version. Just have her, you know, start from the elephant and lower her knees down. And downstretch. Now, you want to make sure she doesn't go under her back, just like anybody, and go real slow and really focus on getting her abs up and in and see how her hip flexors look. Okay, so do you see where I'm going with this? I'm focusing on my cueing, really doing the work, because I might want to emphasize this or that. Typically, when I teach someone with scoliosis, if I'm doing something asymmetrical, my cues are completely different for one side than the other because different things are happening, and that is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing. I'm really personalizing my cues to what I see in front of them. It's not that I'm being the iPilates Katrina and I'm just magically cueing a generic set of cues to her. So you want to really tailor that. And so for somebody with scoliosis, your cues are going to be completely different. Okay, and that's going to really challenge you and be awesome for your growth as an instructor in terms of what are you seeing, not just using the cues that you like best, that you've been taught, that you heard work well for somebody else or whatever. You're going to have to come up with other cues. For example, there was one lady that I worked with for a long time, and she, let me see if I can explain this. Her scoliosis, her rib cage rotated so that she was kind of always turned her shoulders towards her right side. So her left rib kind of stuck out more in the front. And so for her, the cue, pull your left rib in, really worked for her. And she got that. I'd given her tons of other cues, but that was what eventually magically worked for her. And so she could, like, find it with that cue. Is that cue the best one for everyone? No, but for her, that totally worked. And it helped her feel what she needed to feel to get the right connections, and it made a huge difference. I mean, she'd swear by that cue on almost any exercise. because of how different it helped her back to feel. And that's why she was coming, she had back pain from her scoliosis. If people have rods in their back, I'm assuming this girl doesn't, because she you didn't mention any of that, but a lot of people who have scoliosis have already had surgeries. There will be less movement in the spine at the area where there's a fusion. Go figure. And you want to be careful of having the joint above the fusion and below the fusion take too much pressure, because they'll tend to compensate for the area that's not working, it's not moving. And that happens whether it's a fusion that happens naturally or an area that just doesn't move, whether it's fused or not, or if it's a fusion that's been done surgically. So you want to just watch out for hypermobility at those joints, because you can actually cause excessive wear and tear and cause problems there where people eventually need another fusion because that problem is causing pain. Okay, so overall, I want you to feel confident in what you're doing and enjoy her. You've got a lot of cool things you can work with her. Focus on safety. Omit or skip an exercise that you think, you know, she's a little too spazzy for yet, but keep working her towards us. So a lot of that's going to be proactively giving her more safety cues and such. But you know, she's 14. She's in a, you know, getting in towards adulthood, and she's wanting to compete in a sport at, you know, high school level, that she needs to have this coordination and precision in her body. And you would be surprised how much Pilates at that eighth grade level can really make a difference in sports, because they're kind of at that wobbly noodle, and if they really get that strength up, it can make a huge difference. I just remember this cute little boy, he wasn't little, he was taller than I was, but he was a baseball player freshman year in high school, and he was so tight. When he did the leg lowers, his feet and straps, his feet went to like a 45-degree angle, his hips. Yeah, and within a couple months, he was at 90 degrees, just with the active stretching, no passive stuff, and it was amazing, the coordination. I've never seen someone such a wet noodle as him, and it made such a huge difference in his baseball. So keep bringing what you are doing back to her sport, back to her pain. Okay, so the mom's focus is on the scoliosis. Her focus more likely is going to be on the pain in the knee and performance in the tennis. Okay, so there's a lot of psychology there. Talk to the mom about the scoliosis. Talk to her about the other two. And really just focus your cues. Don't worry so much about which exercises to do. Go through a nice full repertoire. And then if she wants, if you think she'll do it, give her a little homework. And you might want to go over with her mom. Again, don't overload her. She's probably got a ton of things if she plays tennis and tons of homework. Just a couple things every day. One of the most profound homeworks I ever gave to someone with scoliosis was this simple. I told her, okay, I want you, anytime that you have a free second, so whether you're standing in line at the grocery store, you know, you're, you know, the teacher's calling roll, whatever, I want you to feel where you're sitting. Catch yourself and check, evaluate. Because with the scoliosis, they tend to kind of sit to one side so that one butt cheek is heavier than the other. They're standing on one foot and leg more than the other. They're very asymmetrical. They kind of lean to the side or something. And just kind of finding and catching yourself, because the more they can find where center is and try to live there, the more the body is going to undo the muscular imbalances by itself, because the weak muscles will start to get stronger by just having to work and being forced to work. And the tight ones will have to lengthen out. So teach her what center is. Constantly draw her attention. Okay, you tend to want to go here. This is where our center is. Oh, wow, really? That's center? Yes, that's center. So you are her eyes, and you can help her with that. Okay, so I just want, for those of you that maybe don't have a client with scoliosis or patellofemoral syndrome or any of that stuff, or kids, just take out of this that a lot of times we have complex things you want to prioritize and think about when you do your value-adding statements. What is really going to help them? Because like this particular instructor pointed out, she wants to make sure that the client wants to come, the girl, not just the mom wants her to come. And so the way to do that is to get her excited about why she's coming and what it's going to do for her. So that's all vision casting and value-adding statements. So maybe go back over that lecture. I don't know of a single client that lecture wouldn't help. I can't emphasize enough that that's probably the most important skill as a Pilates instructor, and yet most people don't think of that at all as actually helping your teaching. And most studios don't talk about that at all. Okay, so questions about this? If you have a client with scoliosis and you have some questions as to how this applies, or patellofemoral syndrome, or a child, send me an email. Let me know what you thought and if it was helpful. And I'd love to get your feedback. If you're listening to this and it's like 2 years later, give me a call or email and let me know what you thought. If you have any follow-up questions, you can always send the emails in. You don't have to, like, you know, be the week after or something like that. Anyways, I hope you have a great night. And just remember that you want to make sure that your clients know that everybody deserves to enjoy movement.